What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The trade that has the entire NBA buzzing, Luka Doncic to the Lakers, Anthony Davis to the Mavs. The Spurs now sending Fox to join Wemby. The Kings sending Fox to join Wemby and the Spurs. What should the Knicks do? To answer all our NBA trade deadline questions, we bring in Sam Quinn of CBS Sports, covers the NBA. Hey, Sam, how are you?
Exhausted. It's been a day. I usually expect around deadline season to have things kind of build up and crescendo Wednesday night into Thursday morning, but no, we just decided to do it all this weekend. So I guess here we are. I hope we have some more stuff coming in the next few days, but we've had a whole deadline in a day.
And the one, we'll start with the one that has, I think all of us still have our jaws dropping over. Trading, let's start with how unlikely, I was going to say unprecedented, but it is the NBA and it is, you know, things happen. But to trade a player who is 25 years old and already 5-time first team NBA and had brought his team in unlikely fashion to the NBA Finals just last June, how unlikely is it to trade a player of that caliber?
This is by a wide margin the least expected trade I've ever encountered in my time, not only covering the NBA, but watching it as a fan. And you kind of have to break it into multiple components here. If you really squint, you could see an explanation for trading Luka in a vacuum, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when something like this happens, the first thing you think is, number one, he didn't want to re-sign there, which is possible. There hasn't really been definitive reporting there either way. And then the other thing you think is maybe there's something going on physically that we don't know of, whether it's this calf that he's out with now, whether the conditioning, there's some reason the Mavericks are more concerned about that than the rest of us are. You could talk yourself into a scenario throughout all of that in which it makes sense to trade Luka. The problem is the way they went about it was just organizational malpractice. You cannot conduct the process the way that they did, which was essentially to go to a single team, have a single target, and I don't want to say make the first trade that was offered, but it's one thing to make a bad trade. It's another thing to lose a negotiation within that trade, right? Like, they didn't just trade Luka for Anthony Davis and Max Christie in the first round pick. The Lakers had another tradable first round pick in 2031.
Right.
You're telling me Rob Pelinka wasn't going to give that up? You're telling me Rob Pelinka was walking away from Luka Doncic over the inclusion of Dalton Connect?
Right.
Like, okay, maybe Austin Reeves was off the table. You could talk me into that. But to lose a deal on the margins of this magnitude that way is just, that's inexcusable. I mean, frankly, if Nico Harrison didn't have such a strong track record before this trade, I'd immediately be calling for his head and saying he should be fired. Like, I'm speechless at how they handled this negotiation. I think even if they had gotten both of those picks, if they'd gotten Connect, if they'd gotten some swaps, if they'd gotten everything the Lakers would have had to offer.
Right.
I'm still probably giving that trade a D.
Yeah.
The way it actually played out, like, that's a trade that sets your organization back possibly a decade.
Right. You know, so before, yeah, the most inexcusable part is that if you make the decision to make a trade, you have to shop Luka around to the entire league, let all 29 teams know, and let them all line up, even if you want to keep it a tight window and say, everybody's got 48 hours, bring me your best offers. And then you can decide between the Nets offering you a bajillion first-round picks or the Jazz offering you Lauri Markkanen and a bajillion first-round picks or... you know, I don't know. Are the Minnesota Timberwolves saying, hey, here's Anthony Edwards and we're interested? I don't know where, what teams, you know, who might do what. We have no idea. But even if, to your point, you come back around, you have fallen in love with Anthony Davis as the perfect fit, a 32-year-old player for your win now window, I think you have to let all those other teams in the pressure of that force Rob Pelinka to give you not only the other first-round draft pick and Dalton Connect, but I think you even have to say, like, you can say Austin Reeves is off the table, but hey, dude, I've got all these other options, so you have to either trade him to me or trade him to somebody else and bring me back something that you get from that haul. But, like, you have to maximize it. And that's what's so pathetic about this, is that they didn't, you know, I don't understand. And that's what makes it crazy. But, you know, getting to your point on maybe they're scared about the conditioning and looking in a year and a half at a $345 million contract. Do we give them any benefit of looking at what's going on right now with the Lakers, let's say, and Joel Embiid, a player who you sign and then you have these health or injury problems?
I mean, we exist in an NBA where Bradley Beal not only got a supermax but got a no trade clause. Like, if you're afraid to give Luka Doncic a supermax, like, what are we doing? Like, who are you willing to pay at that point? Like, look, I know that there's risk associated with all of this. Right? Like, when you're paying anybody that amount of money, something can go wrong. Basketball is a random and dangerous sport. Like, anybody could slip on the wrong night and tear an ACL, and all of your organizational plans can fly out the window. I understand that. If there's somebody you are going to invest in, it's usually going to be the 25-year-old guy who's made several All-NBA teams, who took you to the finals 9 months ago.
Uh-huh.
This just happened.
Uh-huh.
I just don't even know what to say. And, like, to go back to your point about not shopping him around, like, the Spurs just gave up 4 first-round picks for De'Aaron Fox.
Mm-hmm.
How many are they giving up for Luka? 10? Like, I don't know what the number is. I don't know what other players would have been on the table. Like, this is an enormous bet on Anthony Davis specifically. And I'm not going to sit here and badmouth Anthony Davis. I think he's somewhere between the 10th and the 15th best player in the NBA. He seems to think playing with traditional centers is going to make a really big difference for him. I'm pretty dubious. I think that's going to affect their spacing quite a bit. I think there's a chance that the Mavericks are a good team, like a team that can win a round in the playoffs right now, and maybe they use some of, you know, the assets they have left over to go get a little bit more offense and make a real go of this. But, like, I'm trying to think of what would have to happen to justify this trade for them. Like, if you do anything else besides win a championship, mm-hmm. the trade's a loss. Like, that is such an enormous bar to set here. And I look at this for the Lakers, and I just think about what a colossal bailout this is for a team that was going nowhere, right? Like, they had these two superstars, and around them there was very little else. One of the stars is 40, mm-hmm. is going to be around for maybe another year, maybe 2 years, whatever it is. The other one is very injury prone, is never really developed the jump shot in the way that they would have hoped. Like, they were a first-round team as constructed a day ago. I'm not saying this current version of the team now with Luka is going to win the championship, but the current version of the team doesn't matter. Like, the next version of that team that contends might not have any of these players besides him. He's all that matters. They have a top five player now, and a top five player who can be at that level for the next 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Like, I don't know how the Lakers keep getting away with this, frankly. Like, this is Shaq all over again. This is LeBron 6, 7 years ago. Like, they keep finding a way to swoop in and steal these in-their-prime superstars who take otherwise, you know, unimpressive Laker teams and turn them into contenders. So I don't know who's going to be on the team in 2 or 3 years. Frankly, I don't know who's going to be on the team in 2 or 3 days. I think they have more moves to make, but it doesn't matter. They have Luka. They have the next generation in one player.
Talking to Sam Quinn from CBS Sports about Lakers, Luka, the trade. And so one of the obvious questions that I was talking about earlier here is, what do you think, you know, yeah, there may be more moves for the Lakers, but how do you think the fit between Luka and LeBron will work out for the rest of this season?
I mean, they're not going to stop anybody. Like, we can get that out of the way. They're not going to play a lick of defense, especially, like, they're both, I don't want to say bad defenders. I would say bad within the context that they're going to have to defend. They're both high IQ. They can both, like, help off of the ball. They're both big. Neither of them are going to stay in front of, like, a real ball handler for consistent possessions now. Like, LeBron is too old. Luka has had to do too much on offense. They're not going to generate stops one-on-one. Austin Reeves this year has been worse than both of them. Like, if those three guys are in your starting lineup and you don't have an Anthony Davis-level rim protector, you're going to be one of the worst defenses in the NBA. Like, that much is a given. Offensively, I am a little bit more optimistic than most. I don't really buy into this notion that, like, oh, there's only one ball. LeBron has played with a few really high IQ ball handlers in the past. Rajon Rondo comes to mind. Marc Gasol comes to mind. He's not known for being an off-ball player. He's deceptively good at it. And when you give him a really high IQ player to kind of mind-meld with, they can kind of take advantage of the more rank-and-file guys, rank-and-file thinkers, really, in ways that most players won't. I just think they're so smart, they're going to figure it out. I think they need more shooting, and they clearly need some size, because Jackson Hayes is not a starting-caliber NBA center. Frankly, he's not a backup caliber NBA center. I mean, there's a reason the Lakers have been linked to so many backup centers. It's because Jackson Hayes wasn't working, and Maxi Kleber can give you minutes. I think you think of him more as a four than a five at this point. So I think LeBron and Luka in and of itself, like, you could make that work. I don't know that I would feel as good about it as maybe if it had happened several years ago, but the rest of the roster is what I'm looking out here for, because right now the team doesn't make sense, and nor should it, because they had one big man and they had to trade that guy to get Luka.
Mm-hmm. What about, and I know it's hard to speculate, but if we look at Luka, and the Mavs have obviously been trying to get through to him on conditioning and maybe getting a little bit more consistency in terms of effort on defense or some of that stuff, but in particular, the conditioning part of it. We look at how incredibly talented this player is, and, you know, he's 25 years old and he's already been all NBA first team 5 times. Is there something to spending some time, whether that just ends up being the rest of this season and into the off season or another year after this, spending time with LeBron and the shock of a trade, getting traded from a team that you thought you would be with forever, that there's another gear to Luka's game that could be that he could find now.
Yeah, LeBron won a championship with Dwight Howard. LeBron won a championship with J.R. Smith. LeBron won multiple championships, I think, with the Birdman, Chris Anderson. Like, he has taken all manner of knuckleheads to the finals. Like, this is something that he does. Now, you kind of have to buy in, and LeBron is kind of infamous where it's kind of his way or the highway where when you're playing with him, where I think Luka will have his trust and will have his respect from the start. But I do think that they're going to hold him to a standard there and expect him to hold his end of the bargain. But I think we do have a track record here of guys whose careers were kind of going sideways, and they get to LeBron, and all of a sudden they're the best versions of themselves. I would feel a little bit better if the organizational infrastructure was a bit stronger. They have a rookie head coach in J.J. Redick. For the record, I do think J.J. Redick has done a good job in his first year, and I think he's going to be a good coach, but this is a pretty tall order, taking on an in-his-prime player who has a chance to be one of the 15, 20 best players in NBA history. Like, that's a lot for a rookie head coach. They have a front office that is kind of messy, where you don't always know on any given day who has the owner's ear, who's in control, who's making these decisions. I'd feel a little bit better if there was a stronger hand at the wheel here. But I do think LeBron's influence is significant, and I do think getting traded in this manner is the sort of thing that can hopefully shock him into reconsidering some stuff. So I'm optimistic. I think for however long he is a Laker, whether that's 18 months and he leaves as a free agent in 2026, or for the next decade, I think you're going to see the best version of him that he is capable of being. I am very excited for the rest of Luka Doncic's career. I think getting to LeBron here and now is probably going to be good for him.
What about the behind-the-scenes sort of palace intrigue of this? If we take Nico Harrison, general manager of the Mavs, if we take him at his word, nobody other than Rob Pelinka seemed to know about what was going on here. Do you, until, like, let's say the 11th hour, do you believe that Clutch Sports and, you know, their agents, that Rich Paul, that or LeBron James, that they didn't, you know, they didn't know about this until it got, you know, to practically being a done deal?
Well, remember, Anthony Davis was doing interviews with Shams Charania, what was it, a week ago, less, where he was openly campaigning for the Lakers to go trade for a center, right? Like, If he knew he was getting traded, I don't think he'd be out there telling the world, yeah, I think the Lakers should do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. I do think he was kind of caught by surprise. Now, do I think it was as 11th hour as maybe it's been presented? The thing that has me questioning that a little bit is that Anthony Davis waived his trade kicker. Mm-hmm. That, to me, does not strike me as the sort of thing someone does on a whim in the moment that they're traded, right? Like, that sounds to me like something that has to be measured and considered, especially when, like, look, I don't know if Anthony Davis, if he lined up all 30 teams and said, pick the one you want, if Dallas would have been the one he wanted. I think it's an interesting destination. I think Dallas is an organization that generally is, I don't want to say, it's in the middle of the pack from a desirability standpoint, but the roster is generally good, and Jason Kidd, remember, coached Anthony Davis with the Lakers in 2020. He was an assistant under Frank Vogel. Like, I mean, maybe he could have been talked into it in like an hour, but I have to imagine there was a little bit more of a time lag than was presented, but I don't think this is something that, like, Davis was involved in meetings days, weeks in advance. I just think if that's the case, like, that it gets out at that point. Like, think about when the Lakers were pursuing Kawhi Leonard back in 2019, and, like, every hour there was some new update from the Lakers side of things. Mm-hmm. Like, This is
marketers. Are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
This is an organization that has historically struggled to keep secrets. When Russell Westbrook was on the trade block, both as a Laker and when he was coming to the Lakers, like, we heard stuff all the time. So I'm pretty dubious that if people knew that this could have been kept a secret. So that implies to me that for the most part, this was pretty well contained.
Yeah, I think this one was kept as a secret because I think Rob Pelinka was terrified that it would get out and the other teams would start bidding on it. So this one, he absolutely was in his best interest to keep as a secret. What? Two more questions before I let you go. One, give me your review of the Sacramento Kings trading De'Aaron Fox to the Spurs, now going to play with Wemby, and the fit there and how you like this trade.
I can't believe the Spurs got away with it again.
Yeah.
I'm looking back at this, and 9 months ago, the Spurs and the Kings and the Bulls got together for a trade where all the Bulls tried to do was save money, and the Kings got a high-profile guard, and the Spurs walked away with the best asset in the deal, which was the unprotected swap rights in 2031. And at the time, I gave the Kings a D-minus in that trade, and I gave the Spurs an A+. And I just kind of remember thinking, like, man, the Spurs have kind of identified the suckers at the table here in Chicago and in Sacramento, and they did it again with the same two teams, where they trade, like, on paper, this looks like they gave up a lot. Like, you hear four first-round picks, and you think, oh, they gave up a lot to get this guy. Well, one of those picks is from Charlotte, and it's lottery-protected this year, so it's fake. It's not conveying. One of those picks is their own in 2027. If you have Fox and Wembanyama, you're going to be pretty good. So that pick is probably going to be 27, 28, something like that. One of those picks was Chicago's own pick in 2025, which, hey, Bulls, you know you could have just tanked to keep that pick because it was top eight protected. You didn't have to trade for it back. Mm-hmm. And then, sure, the 2031 Timberwolves pick, that is potentially valuable because we have no idea what they're going to be. But that trade is just kind of a mystery box, right? Like, that's just, we don't know what any team's going to look like in 2031. So, sure, is it valuable? Yeah. But is that alone enough to justify, like, the Spurs getting De'Aaron Fox? Like, of course not. The Spurs still have most of their best draft assets. They kept all of their great young players. They're still flexible from a cap standpoint. Like, they kind of just went to Sacramento and stole their best player. I don't really know how else to say this. Like, every time the Spurs and the Bulls and the Kings get together for a trade, the Spurs win it, and they win it convincingly.
All right, and last one. The New York Knicks, for our listeners, the Knicks at the deadline. Obviously, the OG Anunoby injury, we're hearing a foot sprain, and exactly how much time that means that he'll miss, we don't know. He's listed as questionable for the next game, but that means nothing. You know, it could be Lisfranc and he could be out for the season. It could be you miss a week. It could be you miss 3 or 4 weeks, you know, 6 weeks. We have no idea. But looking at that now, OG injury, and it, with or without it, the Knicks obviously don't have a ton of assets, but what do you think is possible, or, you know, what might you be hearing and what's possible for the New York Knicks as they face the deadline?
So the struggle, as much as they don't have assets, it's that they also don't have matching salary. Mitchell Robinson is not very expensive. He doesn't make very much. Precious Achiuwa does not make very much either. You combine the two of them and you're looking at $18, $19 million in matching salary. That's not that much. That's, like, especially if those are your two backup centers for the playoffs, and you got to keep one of them. And I think they're kind of looking at Mitchell Robinson based on the market right now as kind of their deadline addition, and I think he's a significant one. Mm-hmm. I think improving their offensive rebounding and getting a real rim protector in there has a chance to be pretty transformative. I think they're going to look at the lower end of the wing market. Like, I think Philadelphia has probably played so well enough now that Gershon Yabusele is off of the market, but I think they'll explore guys on minimum deals. I think they'll explore, like, Precious is probably playing his way off the trade market too lately, but like, could you turn Precious to Tua at his $6 million or whatever he's making into like a low mid-level kind of wing? The wing market is never cheap. The Knicks saw that with Mikal Bridges when they gave up 5 first-round picks to get him. I wonder, looking back, if they might think, man, could we be the Luka team right now? But you know what? Got to look forward. Wings are expensive. They're the players that everybody wants, and that's what the Knicks are going to need if OG Anunoby is going to miss time. I don't see an obvious target. The one thing I might suggest is, if you don't see a target, but you do see someone on the buyout market, maybe something they could do is trade Precious Achiuwa into a trade exception or cap space so that you can get below the first apron and maybe sign a buyout guy. But right now, if you're looking for a big name, the biggest addition the Knicks are going to make probably at the deadline is Mitchell Robinson. If there's going to be a wing, I would expect it to be a lower-end guy, somebody who's playing 10 or 15 minutes. I think when you have Anunoby and Bridges and Hart, and to an extent McBride as well, given even though he's had an up-and-down year, like, you kind of have your big-name wings already. What you're looking for now is, can somebody fill in when somebody's hurt, but mostly just be available for 10 or 15 minutes? I think that's about as aggressive as they're going to get.
Yep. I think that's probably true, and I would feel worse about the Knicks potentially missing out on a Luka trade if I thought that the Mavs would ever have shopped him around the league. But I don't think you beat yourself up if you're the Knicks over it, because it seems like the Mavs were always just going to call Rob Pelinka and do this deal with one team. And, you know, so I don't think you beat yourself up over it.
No, I agree with that. I think this was a fluke, and any, you know, thought of comparing what they got for Luka to any other star package, this was a one-off thing. I wouldn't use it as precedent. I wouldn't use it to reconsider any other teams are building. The Mavericks made a bad decision. It was a bad process. Whatever, we move forward.
Yeah. All right, Sam Quinn does a great job covering the NBA for CBS Sports. If you're not following him, follow him on X. Sam, really appreciate the time. Catch up with you soon.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.